The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
How do we care for ourselves? Maybe it's a topic for today. But the explicit topic is I want to talk about what's called in Buddhism the Four Noble Efforts, the Four Right Efforts. And in a very it's usually presented very simplistically, partly because the way that it's worded, the ancient teachings on these four efforts, it's so convoluted with double negatives and kind of repeating a lot of words, and it just like maybe seems so technical or so complicated. Like how do you make sense of these sentences? Almost, at least that's how it was for me when I was first introduced to them. And for many years as a teacher, I just ignored this teaching. That's a convenient thing to do when you don't know what to do with it. But I think it's actually a very important teaching and very profound. But it's sometimes presented very simplistically by the tradition, maybe to make it easier for people. But this simplistic way of teaching it maybe contributes to the idea that there's a lot of shoulds. And you should not do this, and you should do this, and you better get on with it. And it just feels kind of like jarring almost sometimes, this kind of attitude, if that's how it's taken in. So it's said that whatever is unwholesome, whatever is unskillful, whatever is unhealthy to do, prevent yourself from doing it. Stop doing it if you're doing it. Whatever is wholesome, skillful, healthy to do, start doing it. and keep doing it. Well, I know. I said it in a way that maybe it was a little bit jarring to make the point. I hope I didn't jar you too much. But it's just like, what? You know, this is like a lot of work. It's like they should, and it just kind of doesn't come across very well. The whole orientation around this, the way the original is complicated way is taught, at the heart of it is something very beautiful, very profound. It's knowing there's a treasure, knowing there's something really beautiful and profound here that we want to protect, we want to enhance, we want to support. And the example that I would like to use to begin this discussion was I walk here on Sunday mornings from my house, and there was this wonderful little moment walking down the sidewalk where there was a open car door just in front of the walkway out of a house, and the door was open, and in the little gate through that into the property there, the gate was open, was a mother. And she was talking across the sidewalk to her little daughter, who I didn't see, but the door was open in the car, and she was sitting in the car. And my guess, the daughter was maybe 4 years old, somewhere in that range. She certainly knew how to talk. So I heard the daughter having this delightful kind of talking about something like, as far as I could tell, the dirt on the sidewalk. That was the important topic. And she was just kind of like delighted and happy and talking about the dirt as if it was like a natural wonder, almost. And the mother responded in kind. The mother was there and just kind of, yes, and well, it's a piece of dirt, and wow, you know. It was just delightful. And as I was walking further down the sidewalk, I thought, oh, this is an example of what I want to teach today. You have this little girl who's in this beautiful state of wonder and clarity and delight, and is in relationship with her mother around something, it doesn't matter really what, but the little dirt on the sidewalk, something incidental. And that's something to treasure, that's something to appreciate, that's something to go along with and maintain and support and keep going. And I was challenged when my kids were that age, 4 or 5, to do the very same thing. I remember. I don't think I made any big mistakes, but I remember taking my son up our little walkway to our car, and he would stop in wonder to look at the flowers. Wow, the flower, look at that. He was like, this is the most important thing in the world. Yes, but there was also the carpool to get to. And there were people, the other carpool, waiting for us. And, you know, we have to get to the carpool. So, you know, what's the most important thing here? Do I just let everyone wait for him to finish admiring the flowers? Do I somehow redirect him? And, you know, how do I care for this situation? You know, certainly if I had yelled at him or yanked at him, or if that mother said to that girl sitting in the car, shut up, I'm late, we have to go. I mean, that would have closed something down. That would have lost something, a treasure. So the same thing is true for ourselves. At some point, we discover that we're a treasure. We have something inside ourselves as a treasure. And this teaching on the four right, what's called the four right efforts, the word for right is a Pali word, samma, and samma is a much richer word than the English word right. Right implies wrong, which kind of, again, we're in this kind of maybe dualistic world or moralistic world, puritanical world of right and wrong, what we should and shouldn't do. The word samma means something more like consummate or whole or complete. Something becomes complete in us. And then in that completeness, we feel some treasure. We feel something valuable and important that we want to somehow support and maintain. Probably the original idea of the Noble Eightfold Path, which is teachings on the four right efforts, appears, was not meant for beginners in Buddhism. People just beginning. This is what you should do. These are the right things to do. But rather, they were a description of people who were maturing in the practice, and in the maturing of the practice had discovered something complete, something wonderful, something that was a treasure in their own hearts, in their own minds, in their own being, that was now as valuable in oneself as that delightful four-year-old girl talking about the dirt. And that can take long in the coming to discover that in ourselves. But sooner or later, as people mature in this practice, the idea is at some point, something shifts inside. Something becomes whole. Something becomes healed. Something grows and matures in such a way that we feel, this is valuable. This is good. This is precious. This is beautiful, this is sweet. This is something that needs to be, it feels like there's a reverence to it, or it feels like this is valuable, this is sacred, even, some people would say. And so something about how the mind gets turned inside out from its anxieties and fears and desires, so that the mind becomes not fragmented, not divided against itself, not limited, not preoccupied, but the mind kind of fills out to fill itself with peace, with well-being. Or the heart is that way. The heart is not constricted, not tight, not closed. The heart becomes open, the heart becomes soft, becomes sweet. It becomes a reservoir of peace, of well-being, of safety. And wow, this is cool. This is something. And so for someone who's matured in practice, then just like it was natural, I would say, I hope, for that mother to respond in kind to the little girl in that sweet little way that I saw in that conversation, so at some point it becomes natural for us to respond to ourselves respond to this good heart we have, this good mind we have, to be in conversation with that, to care for it, to attend to it, to begin considering, how do we support this? How do we allow this to grow? The initial maturation like this in Buddhist practice is just the beginning of how mature we can become in the Buddhist inner life. And so it's useful to know that some of us are maybe at least 4-year-olds in the Dharma. And so we have something here that we want to care for and grow. We don't want to ignore it or say shut up. We don't want to override it, because if we get preoccupied in our hostility, preoccupied in our envy, preoccupied in our greed, preoccupied in our conceit, preoccupied in our self-criticism, we are somehow, you know, limiting or even harming this 4-year-old, if I may say that, in ourselves that's growing in the Dharma. Something that's really beautiful. So it's, we come to a threshold, we come to a turning point or a tipping point in the Dharma, where we start recognizing that there's something in us, that this is an important resource, this is an important reference point, this is an important kind of thing to care for. And how do we care for it? We care for it by remembering it. We care for it by being reminded of it or staying close to it. And we care for it by somehow encouraging it along. And so this is, I want to read to you now this, I'll read it a few times, so you don't have to understand it the first time. Don't try to understand it the first time that I read it. So it starts off by about, it uses the key thing is what's unwholesome. And I love the English word unwholesome, the wholesome and unwholesome, because at least in English etymology of the word, it means belongs to the whole or belongs to what is not whole, that's divided or limited. So this idea that we want to live a life which is whole, that all of ourselves is included, so that we can care for all of it equally and mature in it. And so so part of this begins with the idea that there is this beautiful mind that we can have, this beautiful way of being, that that has a certain desire. And the word desire sometimes in Buddhist English is considered a bad word. That word was never bad in the teachings of the Buddha. The word in Pali is chanda, and chanda is, you know, could be seen as a neutral word, but it was often when it's not qualified by something, you know, unwholesome, it always implies wholesome desire. And desire is maybe a little bit limited, because the ancient teaching says that whatever chanda is, it's the desire that gets us to act. So it's not an idle desire. It's a motivating desire that gets us off our seat, our butt, you know, to do something. We want something to happen. So but what it's saying here is this beautiful mind we have is not a passive mind. It's alive. It's vital. It can have motivations. It can want something. So that mother talking to her little girl, my guess it was not so logically thought out. She didn't sit, wait a minute, as the girls talk about the dirt in the side. Just a minute here. I have to look up my parent manual and look at the different criteria that need to be fulfilled so I know how to respond to you. Just takes 5 minutes and just be quiet. Shut up. I would say that in the right circumstances, stress-free circumstances on a Sunday morning, that the mother had this natural instinct, this natural desire coming out of her beautiful love for the child. She had this desire to speak, to act in this simple, supportive, equal way with the daughter. There was a beautiful desire coming out of that good heart, her love. So the same thing can happen with us, that this beautiful mind, this that we start tapping into through this practice sooner or later, can have a natural desire in it, a wholesome desire. So here's what it says. A practitioner takes up, I'm going to simplify it still. A practitioner takes up and holds up a mind that gives rise to this kind of desire. So if you have a love for the child, understand, oh, now's the time to bring this to the forefront. Let me stop everything else I'm doing. This is a special moment with this child. Maybe they were late for something, but the parent could see, given the circumstances, okay to be late. Right now, this is what I should take up. I should take up the love for the child. I should take up the presence of mind, presence of heart to be with her. That's what I should do. That's where I should be right now. So if a practitioner of the Dharma knows something about their own inner goodness, their own inner wholeness, their own inner peace, love, care, knows something that's here, it might not always be present, but you might realize, oh, now's a time to pick it up. Now's a time to hold it up. Now's a time to stay close to it. It's not meant to be a should. It's not meant to be a work. The reference point is the opposite of work. The reference point is a desire that initiates that just the heart's wish. The heart wants this. Shouldn't we kind of listen to the heart's wish? What's your deepest wish? What's your heart's deepest desire? I would argue that in the context of that sidewalk conversation that I saw, I wouldn't be surprised if at that moment the deepest desire that the heart of that mother was to just be there for her daughter for this precious little exchange. Who knows what background they've had? Maybe the mother is hardly ever there. She's busy working, and this was an opportunity to connect that was, invaluable and rare for her. So this is the time to take hold of this desire, to this mind that has this desire, and to act on this desire. This is the most natural thing to do. It didn't require a parent manual. It just required being sensitive to the heart's wish. So a practitioner takes up and holds up this kind of mind, a mind giving rise to a desire. So here's a emphasis is having a desire. This is not about letting go of all desires. This is allowing a certain desire to be born, a healthy desire, I would say a natural desire. For what? This is the double negatives. So prepare yourself. Put on your seatbelts. Desire for the non-arising of non-arisen unwholesome mental states. Do you see why, So in more plain English, it means if you're not doing so, if your mind doesn't have something unwholesome going on, stay close to that mind that wants to not have those arise. That's what it's saying. So if the mother is talking to her daughter and feels as this is, stay close to that mind that has a desire not to get sidetracked by her smartphone. I don't think she was holding it, but I can imagine some people, it's like a habit to look at their phone, and you know, it's important things there, and it's probably more important than the daughter, right? So the daughter is talking about dirt, and the dirt, well, that she can wait. You know, I have to check for emails or texts or news or, you know, what's happening on Netflix. There's all these important things, right, that we, the very, but no. She has a mind that wishes, let's not be distracted by the phone. This is a time to be. So let's not get distracted. Let's not go off someplace else. Let's not give birth to some impatience, annoyance. Let's not do this. So there can be so nothing's happening that's unwholesome, and there can be a healthy desire. Let's stay this way. The girl wants mother's attention. Let's leave the phone at home. Let's leave the phone alone. Let's not get distracted. Let's not get caught up in being efficient in the drive and being there, you know, I don't know what. All kinds of things that it's easy to get annoyed, be upset, be angry, be impatient. Let's not do that before those things arise. Let's stay true here. So then this complicated sentence is more complicated. But the emphasis of the sentence is really do this seriously. Really give yourself to it. Put initiative into this direction. This is not a passive thing. So here it goes. A practitioner undertakes and strongly initiates, that strongly initiates, the taking up and holding up of this good mind that gives rise to the heart's wish for the non-arising of non-arisen unwholesome mental states. So all those words turn out to be important as a way of saying this is important. This is something we can give ourselves to. Not as work, but with an enthusiasm, with a inspiration. In fact, some translators of English will translate this word chanda, that here translated as desire, as enthusiasm. And they get a very different feeling then for it. So that's the first effort. The second one is, says all those things again, but this time, for the abandoning of unwholesome states of mind that have arisen. So that mother is sitting talking and she feels her impatience, and there's a heart's wish, no, not now. I don't need this. Let it go. Let it go. So, and so that letting go of unwholesome states is not puritanical, it's not judgmental, it's not that, you know, you're good or bad because you have it. It's very simple. The heart is so simple, so whole, so sensitive, so valuable, that of course there's a desire to not sully it. Of course there's a desire not to harm it. Of course there's that desire, that enthusiasm. There's something better going on here than getting angry. What is that? What's better than getting angry? That's what a mature practitioner learns. As the practice deepens, we recognize there are better things to do. Oh, let's stay with what's important. Let's let go of the anger. That's not needed right now. Something else is needed. So then it goes and switches to the third and fourth right effort. Now the focus is on wholesome mental states, wholesome mental ways of being. And because I said wholesome can mean whole, can mean healed, can mean beautiful, healthy. These healthy states, something that we are starting to learn to recognize for ourselves. Oh, this is good. This is really good. So a practitioner undertakes and strongly initiates the taking up and holding up of a mind giving rise to enthusiasm, for the arising of unarisen wholesome states. So they're not there yet, but this good mind, this good way of being that we mature in this practice, knows there are better things here. Let's give ourselves to it. Let's arise it. This is good. Rather than being angry, let's have love. Rather than being stingy, which that just makes me feel tight and constricted, let me remember how good it is to be generous. Let's be generous here. Let me arouse that, the generosity, something. And then I love the fourth one. And because of how many verbs there are, so those of you who don't want to do a lot of work, you know, this is a warning, because this word, all these four, six verbs are like, oh. But I see it as, this is like, the enthusiasm is big. Now the heart's wish is like, yes, it's like a big yes. One Buddhist teacher, at this word for desire, chanda, he says what it is the, It says Ajahn Suchito, the famous English monk, says it's the heart's yes. It's saying yes to this. A practitioner undertakes and strongly initiates the taking up and holding up of a mind giving rise to the enthusiasm for the continuation, non-forgetting, increase, abundance, cultivation, and fulfillment of arisen wholesome mental states. So if you have something good going, if you have a mental state that's good and it's valuable, you're allowed to have enthusiasm to maintain it. You know, unless you know something better to do. You know, if you have something better to do, please. But if you have something really good going on already, stay close to it, protect it, maintain it, stay with it. If you're connected to this good heart, this good mind, don't give it up easily. One of the great challenges I like to give people is if you have a good state of mind, coming out of meditation, for example, why do you give it up? For what do you sacrifice it? You know, what are you attached to? What is it you want? What does you do that seems more important that might cause it? So again, when I was I had young kids at home, back in the ancient world, where we had this thing called paper newspapers that they would deliver to our house every day, and so I liked to read the news at newspaper at breakfast, and that was nice enough. But I realized after a while, with needing to take the kids to school and get them dressed and fed and everything had to be due, that I would be exhausted and stressed by the time I dropped them off for school. And something had to change. And the thing that had to change was my attachment to reading the newspaper. And so I was willing to sacrifice my well-being because I really wanted the newspaper. So once I gave up the morning newspaper, the whole morning went smooth. I wasn't protecting some desire I had that it allowed the whole thing to go smoothly and easily, and I was a better parent. Continue the wholesome. Don't forget about it. Let it grow. And this is a special word. Let it grow into an abundance. How often do you associate Buddhism with a sense of abundance? Let it fill you. And it has the word fulfillment, which means in Pali, let it fill you. These are beautiful states that don't have to be incidental, don't have to be partial. They can really fill us from the toes up to our head, can fill our hearts. These are beautiful states that are worth developing and growing. Why? Because it's the heart's wish. And that, I think, is the beautiful thing that can happen as people, eventually, as people mature in this practice of mindfulness, is that we're so present for ourselves, so sensitive and attentive to what's here, we have a clear sense of what our good heart wants, and the clear sense of how natural it is to let go of what harms it, and to continue what supports it, that enlivens it. So this is the teachings on the four right efforts. So I hope that this made this teaching come alive for you and meaningful for you. I think of it as very important in Buddhism, this whole emphasis on wholesome and unwholesome, to grow in the wholesome, to shrink in with the unwholesome. So that was what I have for today. So we have some minutes before we usually break, and today for the potluck,